in the limelight.
Even after Trump-appointed bureaucrat Emily W. Murphy of the General Services Administration signed a letter enabling Biden to start working with federal agencies and prepare for a transition of power, Donald Trump has personally continued to resist conceding. What is he after with his bogus legal challenges of a rigged and stolen election? Can he really hope for a legislative coup? Is the contemporary United States a country divided not merely on political and ideological issues among its body politic, but more frighteningly along different conceptions of reality? Public intellectual Noam Chomsky sheds light on these questions with groundbreaking insights in this exclusive interview for Truth Out. Stay tuned, please, for this interview, which is published under the heading Noam Chomsky says Trump has revealed the extreme fragility of American democracy. Trump's campaign continues to mount legal challenges to the electoral process, pushing outrageous falsehoods, while Rudy Giuliani has gone so far as to make outlandish claims of a vast global conspiracy to steal the election from the great leader. In your view, what is really behind Trump's legal challenges?
Speculation, of course, but I'll indulge in a bad dream, which could become reality if we are not on guard, and if we fail to recognize that elections should be a brief interlude in a life of engaged activism, not a time to go home and leave matters in the hands of the victors. I suspect that Trump and associates regard their legal challenges as a success in what seems a plausible strategy. Keep the pot boiling and keep the loyal base at fever pitch, furious about the stolen election and the efforts of the insidious elites and the deep state to remove their savior from office. That strategy seems to be working well. According to recent opinion polls, 75%, or 77% of Trump backers say Biden's win was due to fraud. And the anger among Trump's base is tied to a belief that the election was stolen. Rejection of the legal challenges with ridicule may please liberal circles, but for the base, it may be simply more proof of the Trump thesis. The hated elites will stop at nothing in their machinations. Meanwhile, this strategy requires keeping the wrecking ball, Trump's symbol, actively at work. Do nothing to deal with the pandemic, even delay in providing data to Biden's team, while a top nurses' union warns of catastrophic death in the growing chaos, whilst our hospitals are knowingly still not prepared and the government is on vacation. Viewed through the lens of this vile strategy, if the pandemic gets worse, so much the better. Then local officials will try to impose restrictions and even lockdowns to control patriotic Americans, in line with the plans of the supposed communist-run deep state, leading to economic harm and intrusions on normal life. Meanwhile, Trump and his associates could abandon other normal governmental activities so that when Biden establishes what they describe as a fake government on Inauguration Day, the immediate problems will be severe and failure likely. On that day, which will live in infamy among the faithful, Trump might set up what he claims is an authentic government in Mar-a-Lago, with a Mitch McConnell Senate in his pocket and a furious popular base. The next step would be to make the country ungovernable, a speciality that McConnell has been perfecting for a decade, and that an accomplished demagogue like Donald Trump can manage reflexively. Everything that goes wrong can be blamed on the treacherous elites. Trump and associates might, as some have speculated, set up an alternative media empire, incorporating talk radios and other far-right media outlets, but perhaps not Fox Channel, which has shown occasional signs of disobedience. Then they could come roaring back into power in 2022 to 2024, feeding on growing discontent. They would then be free to destroy the environment with abandon and maximize short-term profit for their primary constituency, impose discipline on what remains of government, tame the media, institute harsh authoritarian measures elsewhere, and continue with their abject service to their masters, the real elites, the very rich, and the corporate sector, the decision makers, as recent academic research once again establishes very clearly.
Trump's hopes for denying a Biden election win lie with a legislative revolt, that is, by overturning the certification process. Experts indicate that such an outcome has a very slim chance of taking place, yet the fact that it is even considered as a possibility surely reveals something utterly problematic about the way democracy functions in the United States of America. Can you share your views with us on this matter and discuss what it would take to make the democratic process in the U.S. actually democratic?
Whatever the validity of my speculation about the goals and success of Trump's strategy, the whole election reveals the extreme fragility of American democracy. It is amazing enough that someone whose malevolent decision to provoke an out-of-control pandemic has just killed tens of thousands of Americans can even run for office, even carry much of the country with him, and that the political party that virtually shines his shoes can win a resounding victory at every level apart from the White House. That's putting aside Trump's major achievements, driving to near-term environmental catastrophe and sharply increasing the threat of terminal war, crimes that scarcely registered in the electoral process. Trump's rejection of the election result is just a coda to his quite impressive campaign to accomplish an authoritarian takeover, with the executive purge, whilst his close associate Mitch McConnell converts the Senate into a joke, functioning almost entirely to enrich the rich, and stack the judiciary with young far-right justices whose task will be to impose the ultra-reactionary Trump-McConnell agenda for a generation. We have just endured 40 years of regression, the neoliberal regime, a bitter assault against democracy and the kind of society that can sustain it. An estimate of the monetary cost to the general population was recently given by the Rand Corporation. $47 trillion transferred from the working and middle classes, 90% of the population that is, to the super rich. The top 0.1% doubled their share of wealth to 20% of the total since the Ronald Reagan administration. The Rand Corporation figures are a considerable underestimate. Tens of trillions of dollars more were transferred after Reagan opened the spigots for tax havens, shell companies, and other devices to rob the public. More were developed under Clinton's deregulatory mania. Reagan and his partner Margaret Thatcher moved at once to undermine the labor movement, setting in motion the campaigns to deprive working people of their primary means to resist the assault. The serious decline of functioning democracy is a virtual corollary to the radical concentration of wealth and dispatch of much of the general population to stagnation and precarity. There is no need to review the rest of the sordid story once again, but it is important to remember the deep roots of the undemocratic structure of the government.
Millions of Trump's supporters seem to believe that their leader actually won the election. In fact, there have been even signs claiming world knows Trump won. How do you explain this peculiar phenomenon?
It is also important to consider the devastating impact of the neoliberal regime on much of the country, with particular severity in rural areas that were also major centers of manufacturing. After steady growth for many years, employment in manufacturing sector declined from its 1979 peak of almost 20 million people to under 13 million 40 years later. The decline was in large part the result of policy choices, bipartisan investor rights agreements, mislabeled free trade agreements, which provided unparalleled protection and other rights to corporate power, while setting working people in competition with the most poorly paid and repressed workers in the world. That has been a large factor in the devastation of rural America, towns depopulated or abandoned, no jobs or hospitals or other services, general malaise and a justified sense of having been abandoned. That's hardly conducive to participation in the most advanced sectors of global culture. The source of the divide you mention are complex. The split, however, is very real. And it has major impacts as well. Right now, the country is in the grips of a severe pandemic. It was understood by scientists in 2003, after containment of the SARS epidemic, that another coronavirus was likely to appear. The cultural divide soon emerged. When Barack Obama took office in 2009, one of his first acts was to convene the President's Scientific Advisory Council to request them to provide a pandemic response plan. And they did. It was implemented and remained in force until January of 2017, when one of Donald Trump's first acts was to dismantle it, opening the most anti-science administration in modern American history, with consequences that we have seen on many fronts, and with effects on popular culture. The conflict of epistemologies is real. It is no simple matter to explain or to deal with it. The future will depend substantially on how this conflict is resolved.